right, back on the Young Turks, Jane Guru, John Iderol, legendary GYT reporter George Jarry, what is this?
Hello, how you guys doing?
Right, good, good. Glad you can join us. Love it when you guys are in town. All right, let me retweet about the last hour. Rachel says, of all the pictures of Paul Ryan you could have chosen, I'm glad you went with that one.
It's JR, man.
Yeah, just an FYI to you guys, and that's part of why we read the tweets so we can tell you some of the stuff. Whenever there's audio instead of video, JR chooses the picture to put in. And if it's a Republican, he'll almost always choose an embarrassing one. Yeah. Yes, we do it on purpose.
And you can't just because it's audio doesn't mean you can not watch the video, because sometimes they'll also slip in like funny titles for them that'll change throughout it. So pay attention to that.
That's right. Chris Allen says the Republicans are breaking apart, but unfortunately we don't have a decent Democratic Party to take advantage. Very true. And the mathematician says, isn't it so cute when Republicans get caught on tape trying to stab each other in the back before they cave and grovel before the alpha male? Yes, generally cute. Jerry Cloud says, maybe Trump standing off and letting Republicans run with their plan will be his leverage against them when it fails, if impeached. No, so that's a little convoluted, but no, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to mention one other thing in that story. Trump is thinking short term, I gotta, you know, rescue myself from this disaster. It doesn't look like it's gonna pass. I'm gonna blame Paul Ryan and he backstabbed me during the election anyway. Perfect, it's a twofer, whatever, right? In his small little mind. Not remembering that if you do get in a world of trouble, which is enormously possible, and there is impeachment proceedings, guess who's gonna be thinking, come to papa.
Well, that would mean he knows how the American government works.
That's right. And by the way, that article, that Breitbart article, kept saying, if Paul Ryan continues to be speaker, and it was unbelievably over the top. I didn't mention that either. Over and over again. I mean, I don't know why Paul Ryan's even speaker. I guess there should probably be a new speaker.
Well, they had the same sort of campaign against the previous speaker and it worked out for them. For the most part, they didn't necessarily get the person they wanted, but they can take someone down if they try hard enough.
Yeah. Finally, Billy Runaway says, the devil wears Ivanka. And let's see the TRTnetwork.com/go, the journalism drive. $50 from Blake in New York, $50 from Cindy in Montana, $50 from Janice in Vermont. And man, there we are, almost there. 1,434,909. If we get to 1.5 million, we make new announcements with new names, with new contributors that I think you will absolutely love. So, and every one of you that contributes, you could be super proud of all the stories that Jordan and Nomi and Michael and the new folks who are gonna do the stories bring for you guys, including, by the way, Ryan Grimm, Sean King, and all the wonderful contributors we hired as well. Okay, all right, John, what's up?
Okay, let's do it. I know you've been looking forward to this. ExxonMobil is currently under investigation for allegedly hiding from both their shareholders and also the public at large what they knew about global climate change and mankind's contribution to it, which they have a part in. And as a result of that investigation, we now find out that Rex Tillerson, once executive of Exxon, current Secretary of State, had some shady behavior of his own. The Attorney General's office involved in the investigation said in a letter earlier this week that it found Tillerson had used an alias email address under the pseudonym Wayne Tracker, PI at large, from at least 2008 through 2015. So this was not like, oh, I logged into the wrong email one day. He used it for 7 years. The letter seen by Reuters said Exxon had not previously disclosed the alias account, that Exxon had produced some 60 documents bearing the Wayne Tracker email, but never said it was used by Tillerson for relevant communications at Exxon. It asked the court to order Exxon to identify whether any other email accounts were used by Tillerson. So the story today is Wayne Tracker. The story tomorrow might be some other weird porn star name. And we don't know what issues that might be linked to, but this might go deeper than just the Tracker files.
to be fair,
we're tracking it down.
Yeah. He might have been referring to Wayne Grow from Heat. Maybe he just loved that character. So, God, these well, at that time he wasn't a politician, to be fair to him, but politicians do come up with super goofy aliases. We're going to get back to that on a poll. We're going to have you participate in a second. But to the heart of this story, you don't use an alias unless you're trying to hide something.
Yeah.
And if you're saying, hey, let's send some climate change emails, But I'm not Rex Tillerson, I am Wayne Tracker. That means you know that the climate change emails are going to show that you knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. If you think climate change doesn't exist and you have the evidence for it, why wouldn't you just send the emails under Rex Tillerson? Exactly. That's what you use for every other email.
Yeah.
Well, they actually said it. I mean, the company spokesperson said these were used in place for secure and expedited, meaning we need to secure the truth. We don't want you to actually see that we know what's going on. We're, you know, we're trying to cover it up. This goes in line with Rex Tillerson, you know, his own home. He didn't want fracking near his own home. He joined a lawsuit in 2014 against fracking. So the corruption and the total swindling is quite evident when it comes to him. And what I found really fitting is when I was covering the Native Nations March on Friday, thousands of people outside the White House, Trump and Rex Tillerson were having lunch. So that was fitting.
Yeah, and so New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is the one pursuing this case and why we're finding out about this story in the first place. And he ain't nothing to mess with. So in this, when you've got an actual court case and you start doing depositions and you start asking requests for information, they can't just shred the files. And you can't just hide it by saying, no, that was not Rex Tillerson, it was Wayne Tracker. No, there's no law that says I can't see Wayne Tracker's emails, and it's not that hard to figure out. So these knuckleheads, it looks like, are going to get caught on this. Now, why are we having the investigation in the first place? Because it could be that they did potentially false or misleading statements to investors or the public.
Yeah.
So if you know that climate change is real and it is man-made, and it has potentially devastating consequences, and you hide that not only from the public, but from your own investors, well, that's a big misrepresentation, because that could affect the future stock price of ExxonMobil. If it turns out we find out that climate change is real, man-made, caused by getting oil and gas out of the ground, well, ExxonMobil investors would want to know that, because it's going to affect their stock price. And if you hide that, that's illegal.
Yeah. And so, look, if you were actually acting in the best interest of your corporation, you would see what's going to happen not too long in the future, and you'd start to shift your business to away from fossil fuels, which have a limited shelf life, a limited future, and into something that both doesn't destroy human civilization and also is more sustainable in the long term. Now, obviously, individual executives have a short-term motivation to keep things moving as they have been, because they don't want to potentially upset their stock price. But if you were looking long-term, that's what you do. Unfortunately, in America, that's not how the oil companies work. That's not how the banks work. But we are seeing a couple of oil companies are apparently starting to get this message a little bit, as a result of the Shell video from the early 90s coming out, indicating that they knew that this was going to cause problems even back then, that we were contributing to climate change. I've looked at these oil companies, and a lot of them are in far too small dollar values, trying to move into other areas, investing in both education about climate change, but also into renewable energies. And of course they should. In the long term, why not do it? You can still make tons of money. The government is still going to give you huge tax credits and subsidies and all that stuff. And you can do it while not dooming humanity in the process.
But it's not just Rex Tillerson. I mean, look at Kelsey Warren, the CEO of Energy Transfer Partners. He uses the same energy industry talking points that fossil fuels is the wave of the present. They really poo-pooed solar, wind, all that. And then he's building the biggest wind farm in the Caribbean right now. So whether it's Tillerson, whether it's Kelsey Warren, name your big oil stooge. But they're all con men on the issue.
Yeah, and think about come on, you libs. The ExxonMobil is going to make more money from oil and gas. Well, not if it's not sustainable. Eventually, it'll sink the company if you have not shifted towards renewable energy, and that's why some of them are, right? While pretending that it is sustainable. So and if you're asking again, to John's point, why are they pretending? Why bother pretending? Because their interests are not the same as ExxonMobil's interest. Their interest is, I am an executive in this company for a short period of time, and in that time, I want to maximize my profit, right? And so if ExxonMobil crashes later, that's their problem, not my problem. But while I'm here, I'm going to keep this evidence stocked away. That way, I also don't have as much cost in rebuilding a whole renewable energy side of my business. Yeah. Although again, some are because they're thinking ahead and they think they're going to be around longer. But in Rex Tillerson's case, he already moved to Secretary of State. He's already out of ExxonMobil. So his interests are in line with who cares what the investors think and the company and the public. The public, I don't care about them at all. If I tell everybody there is no climate change, even if I know the opposite, I'm going to make more money while I'm CEO of ExxonMobil.
And think about this, this is crazy. But let's say he stops being Secretary of State someday. Maybe he goes back.
Oh, that revolving door would never happen.
But I mean, he's still working for them. He got like $100 million or something like that payout from ExxonMobil. Mm-hmm. You think they're paying him that for him to go out and say, you know, we're open to climate change.
Right. Yeah, there's like a $600 million blind trust future shares of ExxonMobil.
Right.
I don't know how that's a blind trust, you know, but it's the Trump days. Who knows? Maybe it is in some complicated way. And then he has more immediate money that he was said he was going to get rid of within 90 days. He hasn't, as Trump has been doing ad after ad for ExxonMobil. And it's possible that the amount of money that that's at least $50 million. Yeah. And it's going up every single day as they continue to push forward these fictions. Yeah. And ads for ExxonMobil. So let's get to our fun poll, okay? Because he's got this Wayne Tracker alias. But you know, he's not the only one who's used an alias in political circles. And that includes Democrats as well. First of all, of course, there's the president. Donald Trump would call reporters and pretend to be Donald Trump's PR person, John Barron. Mm-hmm. So he would say, hi, this is John Barron. And Donald Trump is fantastic. Madonna didn't turn him down, he turned Madonna down. I'm not kidding, that's real stories. So we're asking you to vote who's gonna have the best alias here at tytnetwork.com/alias, okay? John Barron for Donald Trump, Wayne Tracker for Rex Tillerson, or Carlos Danger. That's the one that Anthony Weiner used while he was doing sex tweeting.
Yeah. No contest.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I have my answer here. What's Carlos Danger?
Carlos Danger.
It's too good.
It's good, but it's also a little bit too ridiculous. I like Wayne Tracker.
Wayne Tracker is badass.
Intergalactic bounty hunter, Wayne Tracker. And also, it's easy to like mock Donald Trump for calling up and pretending to be someone else. But come on, if you were Donald Trump, wouldn't you pretend to be someone else? In any opportunity you had.
So, but they also all double as porn names.
Yeah.
John Barron. Wayne Tracker and Carlos Danger. And the latest, I don't want to say it.
Yeah, let's not, actually.
So tytnetwork.com/alias. This is a good opportunity for me to quickly tell you, though, about the results of the last poll that we did. It was very important. I didn't get to share it with you. And I know that the country's on pins and needles on this. Is Cenk's latest nickname cool or not cool?
Wait, can I guess? Yeah. The numbers?
Yeah, hold on. First, let me remind people what the nickname was. It's Tupac, because I said a Wolfpack and just Democrats. And so I thought that's kind of cool, Tupac. That sounds pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Now, John, guess if the audience thought it was cool or not cool.
Okay, so I think it's obviously, not cool. Yeah. But I do think that the audience really likes you. And they like the connotation of the Tupac and what those packs are doing. So I'm guessing it's going to be close to 50-50. People being honest and people being bootlickers.
40-60.
40-60 against or for?
Against.
Against.
Okay.
They're not bootlickers.
I'm totally joking about that.
Okay, all right. Well, here's who's not. In this, every single person on air voted against me. Everyone.
Everyone?
Every single person. Yes.
What's the numbers?
No. So on air, I'm saying, you guys. Okay. Now, the numbers. You know what? You're pretty close to right. 36% saying cool, 64% saying not cool.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, so.
36%.
Well, that's because you guys all threw me under a bus. I had no support from you guys. Okay? If you're going to be dicks about it.
It's called bootstraps, okay? Apply it to your nickname.
Okay. All right, what's next?
Okay. It's one of my favorite stories in a while. It's been 6 years since the disaster at Fukushima, and the cleanup of that disaster is not only still ongoing, but the amounts being spent on it have risen dramatically over those 6 years. In case you're not familiar with it, blessedly unfamiliar with a terrible event, a massive undersea earthquake on March 11th of 2011 sent a tsunami barreling into Japan's northeast coast, leaving more than 18,000 people dead or missing. During that, three reactors were sent into meltdown at the plant in the worst such accident since Chernobyl back in the late 1980s. Now, in November of last year, the Japanese government said that the cleanup and compensation costs for the disaster would be an unprecedented $180 billion, doubling the earlier estimates. Now, understand that this cleanup is not only continuing now, it will continue to go on for at least several decades. And so the estimate that was $90 billion at one point and $180 billion last year could well continue to rise.
So let me jump in with an important substantive point before we give you the amazing details. These details will blow you away. But this whole $180 billion, this is the problem with a lot of the old forms of energy. They privatize the gains and socialize the costs. Yeah. So are those companies going to pay $180 billion? Of course not. They can't afford it. And so, hey, when they're making the money and the profits, they got to pocket all of it. And then when Japan gets hit with a $180 billion bill, sad day for the Japanese people. So, and the oil companies and the coal companies and the gas companies do it on an even bigger scale. So we're melting their planet, the ozone layer is getting eroded, we've got climate change. Well, that cost is borne by all of us, including a massive famine and drought happening in Africa today. Well, you bear those costs, they keep all the profits.
Yeah.
So this is just another extreme example of it.
Yeah, yeah, and with numbers that are just difficult to comprehend. I mean, we're talking about larger than the GDPs of many, many countries there being spent just on the cleanup from this one accident. And so there are some amazing things that have developed out of this. Now, if you remember back during the initial disaster, there was this large zone that could not be inhabited by humans. There will be a zone off into the rest of human civilization that will not be able to be inhabited. But they're trying to get some of those villages back on their feet, clean them up so that people can once again inhabit them, but they're coming up against a couple of problems, one of which is, I kid you not, radioactive boars. And so once humans moved out of the area, in the same way as happened in Chernobyl, wildlife filled that void. And without humans to hunt them and drive them off, their numbers exploded. And boars, this is actually the case in America as well, in many parts of the South, they will come in there and they will begin to breed in huge numbers. And because of the radiation in the area, which they apparently are not as affected by as humans, they're very dangerous to consume, with levels of radioactive material 130 times above Japan's safety standards. But the crazy thing is not that there are radioactive boars. It's the number of radioactive boars. They've already killed 13,000 of them.
And it's not enough. They're still running
there.
Around. So what happened was they're in the woods and there's the villages, the towns. Everybody is removed from the 12-mile exclusion zone. The boars come down, but they're already radioactive because of the disaster. That's why it's an exclusion zone and the humans aren't there. So they've taken, and then they find food. Mm-hmm. Right? And they start eating the food and they start multiplying. So this, you know what? I mean, look, number one, it sounds like a movie where the radioactive boars have taken over, right? And it's the radioactive boars versus the zombies. Number two, oh, American hunters, how much would they love to be able to go into the exclusion zone to hunt radioactive boars?
Be all over Fox News, my gosh.
Yeah.
And send Trump's kids. They love that stuff.
Some of the nuclear rods, if you get close to them, now, of course, you won't go to the plant, right? But if you got close to them, humans die within 1 minute. That's how much there is radiation in the fuel, in the nuclear rods, okay?
Yeah.
Now, you think knucklehead American hunters won't be like, oh yeah, let's go do the radioactive boars anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Don't go into the exclusion zone. It's a really bad idea. It's not just boars that become radioactive. And then, of course, there's Godzilla.
But clearly, okay. The media is trying to hush it up, but he's out there. And I'm glad that you brought up the 1 minute thing because I've been following this since the event happened because just the numbers are so big and the danger there as well. And so, as Cenk said, a human can't survive much longer than a minute at a certain range from these rods. But it's even worse than that. It kills humans in a minute. It destroys robots in 2 hours. Like the robots they send in just to look at what's going on, to try to get close to the spent nuclear fuel so it can eventually be retrieved, they die. And these are robots, by the way. They die in 2 hours. They take 2 years to build individually.
They're not normal robots. They're a radioactive resistant robots, and they still malfunction and cease to function within 2 hours. It's amazing. But we haven't even gotten to the more amazing facts.
Let's talk about some of the cleanup effort that's ongoing. So look, there was the meltdown that happened. This is 6 years ago. But spent nuclear fuel is not like wood that's on fire, and it continues to be a problem for a long time. Tokyo Electric Power Company is still pumping water nonstop through the 3 reactors to cool melted fuel that remains to this day too hot and radioactive to remove, generating 400 tons of contaminated water every single day for years and years and years. They have almost 1 million tons of that contaminated radioactive water in a storage space, and so they're going to need more storage spaces. That's just amazing. How long are they going to have to do this? Is it going to be years? Is it going to be decades? Is it going to be longer? Eventually, they are going to have to cap the entire thing like Chernobyl.
But also, something that's really troubling is a lot of these workers are taking off their hazmat suits. Like we saw that in Josh Fox's documentary, the long-titled one, I can't remember, oil spills and all this all over the world. They're taking off their hazmat suits. So besides the threat of the boar, however many are cleaning this up for years, their health is very much a risk.
Yeah, and we should also recognize that at the time of the event, and this has been the case in a couple of nuclear problems like this, there were individuals, engineers working at the power plant that gave their lives to attempt to limit the damage of it as it was ongoing. And so those they can't be forgotten as we look back on this event as well.
To Jordan's point, I want to read two more amazing facts. There are also more than 3,500 shipping containers holding radioactive sludge left over from the initial efforts to decontaminate all that water.
Yeah.
You know how big shipping containers are? So these giant shipping containers, there's 3,500 of them that's got radioactive sludge in it, let alone the 962,000 tons of water. And by the way, think about that, man.
Every day.
It's been 6 years since the nuclear meltdown. The water is still too hot after 6 years. And they have to keep pouring the water in constantly to cool it off. Otherwise, it's going to have an even bigger explosion.
Yeah.
And they have to keep storing that toxic water. And then finally, to Jordan's point, every day, some 6,000 cleanup workers dispose of their protective hazmat suits and other gear, so far generating nearly 65,000 cubic meters of gear, enough to fill 17 million 1 gallon containers. So every day they got to get rid of those suits, 6,000 workers, day after day after day. The waste and the devastation from this nuclear fallout is amazing. Unparalleled.
And it continues, and they're planning for decades from now where they're going to store some of this stuff. They had a plan at one point, by the way, that contaminated water that's been moved through the nuclear fuel to try to cool it. At one point, they considered diluting it and releasing it into the ocean. That was not a popular plan, thankfully, but don't discount it. It could possibly happen.
Well, they got to put it somewhere. Where the hell are they going to put it?
God only knows.
And so the Japanese fishermen are like, no, don't put it in the water. The boar are already radioactive. Then you're going to put it in the water and the fish are going to get radioactive. And then we're going to eat the fish.
Yeah.
No.
So and that was already a fear after the initial disaster as well.
This is not sustainable. You know, they talk about sustainable energy, wind, solar. This is not sustainable.
Yeah. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, though. So we did a story about a month ago about some of the environmental concerns over a proposed expansion to the Turkey Point nuclear generating plant in Florida. And so there's obviously concerns in the wake of Fukushima that this sort of flooding could happen eventually at other nuclear sites and potentially cause the same sort of devastation. So they already have this plant near the coast. They're going to be building two additional plants. And so I used a tool. It's publicly available. You can use it. And you can look at particular parts of the coastline. You can input the expected warming that's going to happen due to global climate change. And you can see the change in the coastline based on those increases. I used the most conservative increase in global temperatures that there's no way we're not going to exceed. Those locations where they're planning to build the nuclear power plants will be underwater within 70 to 100 years. And they are still going to build them there. And so maybe not during our lives, but during our kids' lives, that is going to be an absolutely massive problem. And we're setting up that problem right now. I don't know why that's not a bigger part of the conversation.
Don't put nuclear power plants next to the water. But they do because they need water for the nuclear power plants.
Yeah, and these particular ones actually have these massive channels that they use that they say are hermetically sealed from ocean water and drinking water. But we told you they're not. There's reports showing that they're not. They use that as an integral part of their cooling station. That's right now in Turkey Point.
And don't move people back in when there's radioactive boars on the loose. I know exactly. Boars are aggressive to humans without the radioactive. I mean, I'm no expert, but they are. So, I mean, I know people want to move home and all that, but that's
some scary shit. First.
Yeah, don't forget what happened to Robert Baratheon.
I was already thinking about that. And by the way, you know the solution to radioactive boars, radioactive wolves. Send them in.
I think Trump should go and clear it before anyone goes back.
Well, I
maybe we get Sarah Palin in a helicopter with a high-powered
rifle.
That's
what I was thinking. Yeah, but of course, the right answer is always Wolfpack.
Yes.
Wolf-pack.com.
Radioactive wolf-pack.com.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, guys. When we come back, how much does the media overreport Muslim terrorism versus non-Muslim terrorism? The numbers, you're not going to be surprised that they're disproportionate. I get that. But the degree to which they're disproportionate is fairly stunning. So find out when we come back. Back on the Young Turks, Larry Vetter writes in, all on-air talent voted against Cenk. Beware the Ides of March.
People also voted against him.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. I'm looking out for it.
Don't worry, Cenk. I understand having an unfortunate nickname. I get that.
No, I'm sticking with it. Tupac Uyghur, I'm proud. Speaking of nicknames, Becky Armstrong says, so what is everyone's secret ExxonMobil name? You know, I have one for Rex Tillerson. Instead of going with Wayne Tracker, he should have gone with Rexxon Mobilson.
What was that football player's nickname? It was like Tony Mexico or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a cool one.
Vic's nickname, it's something Mexico. Mm-hmm. I love Julio Jones' nickname, Waffle House.
That's a good one.
Because he's always open. Okay, Tupac isn't enough. I need something to go along with it.
Like, I'll think about it.
Do you see what I'm saying? You can't be Tupac Uyghur if it's your alias. Mm-hmm. Your Exxon Mobil name has to be like Tupac Danger or something, but that's taken. So
damn,
and it's gonna sound kind of porny, right?
Mm-hmm. It's getting there.
I don't want to give anyone ideas, but growing up, I was called Darth Dreidel. So.
That's a good start.
Darth Dreidel.
Okay. And let me do one last tweet for you guys. John Connor, big fuel taking a page from the smoking lobby and clouding the issue by hiding facts about climate change.
Yeah, and the funding of the science intended to deny it and muddy the waters, of course.
Yes,
which they still do.
It's an old trick. So member shoutouts, and we'll do a fun post game here. Well, fun and interesting one. I'll tell you about it in a second. But members of the day are Nick Namar and Benny Gonzalez. So Nick and Benny, thank you so much. You can become a member. As I turn around to put this down, you can become a member by going to tytnetwork.com/join. You get the whole 2-hour show for free. You get all the network shows, including Aggressive Progressive, which Jordan is on from time to time. You get all the post games, all that at tytnetwork.com/join. Okay, and no ads. So I will tell you a story that I was wrong about, and I will I'll explain why I was wrong. And so it's just a fun little story, but it's true. I was wrong about something, and I do want to clarify it. And then the second one is the deep state. Mm-hmm. Now, I promise to talk about the deep state in another post game. We didn't get to it because we had a bananas post game that day that was fantastic. But I'm curious as to your two takes on it and I'll explain what I think is the deep state. So it should be a great, great post game. Okay. All right. Now let's do the rest of the stories.
Okay. Lots of important stuff to get to. Earlier this year, Donald Trump complained that the media wasn't covering the particular sort of terror attacks that he felt they should. And we have a new study that shows that the media's coverage of terror attacks is consistently slanted in a particular direction. It just happens to be in the exact opposite direction that Donald Trump would have you believe. And so these are three academics who looked at almost 100 terror attacks culled from the Global Terrorism Database. Okay, and so this is a widely accepted definition of terror attacks. There, a lot of the attacks are ones that you'll probably remember from having been covered in the media. In total, there were 89 attacks committed by different perpetrators in the US during a 5-year period between 2011 and 2015. Now, of those 89 attacks that happened during that time, Muslims perpetrated 12.4% of them, which should be the story by itself. Because what American thinks that of the attacks that have committed, that have been committed over half a decade, Muslims committed 12.4% of them? No American thinks that. Certainly no Republican voter thinks that.
I wish they'd done a follow-on question in this study. Mm-hmm. What percentage do you think? Now, they didn't poll. They just looked at the actual facts in
this
case.
It'd be 85 to 95%.
What percentage of the terrorist acts are done by Muslims in America? Yeah, it would be an astoundingly high number. And then people would say online, you guys ignore the real problems. Right. Mm-hmm. And the real problem is Islam, obviously. Yeah. The real 12.4% of the problem.
Yeah. So let's break down the results of the study. Of those 89 attacks, 24 did not receive any media coverage from the sources that they examined. Now, admittedly, that's not every source, but they are probably some of the most representative sources, including LexisNexis, CNN, and all of that. Now, let's break down the percentage of media coverage of those terror attacks based on the religious identification of the perpetrator. Let's bring up this first chart. You're going to see there that if it was a Muslim perpetrator, 44% of the media coverage went to those sorts of attacks. Now, you'll notice right under there, you have identified as Muslim, but also identified as foreign born. Now, that is, of course, a subset of Muslim perpetrator. It's also a far smaller percentage of the actual attacks. So if Muslim is about 12%, we're talking about less than a third of that being Muslims who are foreign born. And yet those couple of percentage points of perpetrators get a full third of all of the media coverage of terror attacks in the US between 2011 and 2016. And then finally, you have non-Muslim or unknown. I don't know who that could possibly be in the US, maybe white supremacists. 56% of the coverage, which sounds like a lot, but understand that we're talking about a group that commits over 80% of all the terror attacks.
88% of the terror. So let me give even more context here. So if you're wondering, well, who are these non-Muslim terrorists? You know them, you just didn't have the press call them terrorists far too often. Frazier Glenn Miller, a white supremacist, former Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, attacked a synagogue in Overland Park, Kansas. Robert Deere attacked Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs. Wade Michael Page attacked a Sikh temple in Wisconsin. The list goes on and on. So you get a sense of it, right? Now, a terrorist attack is one that is done for by a non-state actor for a political, religious, or other cause. So if you say, well, come on, Planned Parenthood, is that really a terrorist attack? It is the definition of a terrorist attack. Yeah. He did it for a political and, by the way, also religious purpose.
Yeah.
So, and I did it. We did a story last week about how if you ask evangelical white Christians, when a Christian does a terrorist attack and says he is doing it because of Christianity, do you believe him? Like about 87% are like, no, that's not, that doesn't count, right? When you ask him, when a Muslim does a terrorist attack and says it's because of Islam, do you believe him? They're like, oh yeah. Yeah, it's definitely because of Islam. Yeah.
Well, when I was in the field covering the primary last year, I would question Cruz supporters, Trump supporters. So, you know, you're very focused on the threat of, you know, foreign Muslims and all this. What about the school shooters? What about Planned Parenthood? What about the movie theater shooters? And I'd get just a blank stare. Well, that's not terrorism. I said, no, it's a walk at the beach. And I remember I was out actually in Michigan covering the primary or something, and that Uber driver went on a shooting spree. Can you imagine? He killed 6 people in Kalamazoo. Can you imagine if that was a Muslim Uber driver? It would be weeks a week. So I think the Fox Newsification of instilling fear in your audience is spreading to other media outlets. Exactly. CNN, their ratings skyrocket with, unfortunately, with ISIS attacks, things like that. Mm-hmm. And they should cover it. I don't want to say they shouldn't, but the how much they cover versus the Uber driver or a deranged person in a school or things like that. It's not even comparable. And that's how you have people at rallies that I'm interviewing very, very fearful of Muslims. Yeah. But the school shooters, what can you do?
Yeah. So I just want to be clear on this. It is two different topics. The school shooters are not in this study because they're not considered terrorism. But I agree with Jordan that what am I worried about? I'm worried that my kids are going to get shot in a school. We're going to get shot in a movie theater because it is far more prevalent.
Yeah.
So even leaving aside, even if you don't count the non-Muslim terrorism of the Planned Parenthood shooters and the church shooters that say they're doing it for a political or religious reason, you take out all that stuff. The other stuff is bigger. It's mm-hmm. bigger. The random shooters are much, much bigger. So if we really cared about keeping our families safe, we'd focus on that problem much more. Now, when you talk about the smaller issue of terrorism, Muslim and non-Muslim, well, what are we all focused on? The Muslim ban, the travel bans that Donald Trump talks about. He's like, the foreign-born Muslims are coming here and creating all the terrorism. To give you the exact number of all the terrorist attacks in this five-year period that they studied, 5% were from foreign-born Muslims. Mm-hmm. Now, that got, as John pointed out, 32% of the news coverage.
Yeah.
Gigantically disproportionate. Oh my God, the foreign-born Muslims. But in reality, they're only 5% of the terrorist attacks inside the US. The others are 95%. So we've ignored 95% of the problem and focused all of our energy on 5% of the problem.
And we reported on the DHS memo that said that the Muslim ban was unlikely to be any deterrent to terror attacks happening because citizenship, they find, is an extremely poor predictor for eventual radicalization or violent action. And in terms of like people's fear and what they focus on, and I've long criticized people's insane level of fear of certain types of things and not caring at all about other things that are far more likely to kill you, like a poor diet and air pollution and things like that. But look at like Charleston, the most clear terror attack possibly in a lifetime. This is a guy who said he was motivated by his religion and by his political ideology to start a race war. People were hesitant to label him a terrorist. Mm-hmm. And then you have a president who tweets at about an attempted stabbing at the Louvre, where the only person who gets hurt is the attempted terrorist. But then we have to twist his arm to get him to acknowledge that a mosque was shot up. That's a twisted world that we live in. Now, really fast, I want to show you two more charts. Just a reminder of the numbers that we're working with. Go to this next one. You'll see the breakdown of the actual percentage of perpetrators there. And again, that 88% receiving disproportionately low coverage by the media. But then also, we're not just talking about the fact that these things are mentioned. We're talking about how much they're focused on by the media. You're going to see that in this next chart, the number of articles per attack that are written. If you're a Muslim perpetrator and you commit an act, they'll write almost 100 articles about it. If you're the rare Muslim foreign-born perpetrator, they double that to almost 200. But if you're a white terrorist or we don't know for sure, they might mention you. But they're going to write something like 9 or 10 articles about it, and then they're going to move on to something else.
And there's also an element of media, you know, lacking self-awareness, shocker. But the media correctly criticizes Trump for, you know, what you're doing is going to recruit new ISIS members. Well, how do you think people in Pakistan, other countries, when they see the American media, you know, very hyperbolic, nonstop, there's very very little nuance and context in the reporting. They put neocons and, you know, the usual suspects on to basically fearmonger about the Muslims. So that doesn't exactly help our message across the globe either.
Yeah, and so to give you one more number, and this is from the Cato Institute. It's a different study. Cato Institute is a conservative institute, conservative and libertarian. They say your chance of being killed by a foreign-born terrorist in America is 1 in 3.6 million. So everybody's freaked out over this incredibly low percentage chance. I don't know if you've got a better chance of winning the lottery, but it's probably right in that ballpark, right? Mm-hmm. When in fact, to Jordan's earlier point, what's actually killing us is gun homicides, whether it's in mass shootings, terrorist shootings, or just your husband shooting, your wife shooting, your neighbor shooting, which is happening at an enormous rate and a record-breaking rate way past any other country.
Yeah, and look, I understand we as a species, first of all, we're flawed in that people think they can win the lotto. So I'm not surprised that they think that the chance of them being killed by a terror attack is almost as high. But then also, we get focused on the sexy, violent things. And so, look, gun homicides way more likely to kill you than terror attacks, but gun homicides are a small fraction of all the things that kill people, even just in America every year. If you don't want to die in America, if you don't want to die unnecessarily, stop focusing on Muslim terrorists and start focusing on the goddamn highway. Put away your phone when you're driving, because those sorts of accidents are far more likely to kill you. Look at the nutrition label on your food, because those sorts of things, which lead to most of the top 10 causes of death every single year, chronic illness as a result of diet, is far more likely to kill you. But that's not sexy. Nobody wants to talk about that, even though it's fully within your control.
Yeah, actually, I think it was, now this is a story John and I did together a while ago, so I'm going to do it from memory. But I think it was about falls were number 6 on the list of things that kill you.
Yes.
So
falls from ladders and things like that.
Way above gun homicides and I forget the proportion, but nearly a million times more likely to kill you than a terrorist attack. So just make sure you don't fall down. And you'll be much better off than worrying about some guy coming in from Sudan to kill you.
Yeah.
Okay, speaking of which, not the killing you, but the Sudan part.
Oh, great transition there, demonizing the Sudanese. Wonderful. Okay, well, I'm going to try to flip the script here. This week, the UN is trying to draw attention and potentially money to help solve a massive humanitarian crisis, a huge and growing famine across multiple countries in both Africa and the Middle East. I want to read you this section of a statement by Stephen O'Brien, UN humanitarian chief, who said, "Already at the beginning of the year, we're facing the largest humanitarian crisis since the creation of the UN, well over 60 years there. Now more than 20 million people across 4 countries face starvation and famine. Without collective and coordinated global efforts, people will simply starve to death. Many more will suffer and die from disease." And so members of the UN have been dispatched to try to draw attention to these ongoing crises in a number of countries. The Secretary General of the United Nations arrived in Somalia earlier today and appealed for less than $1 billion in aid to address drought and cholera in the East African nation. We've got a lot of numbers that we want to get to in just a second. But when I look at that number and I think about the cost in human lives, the sheer quantity of suffering that will likely happen in that region because we don't know that that money is actually going to be found. And then I think about the 55 additional billion dollars we're going to throw into the most bloated military budget the world has ever seen. Think about how much goodwill you can buy. If you're being pragmatic, don't even think about the actual good you can do, just the goodwill by taking a tiny fraction of that and sending it to this part of the world to save people's lives and relieve some of the worst suffering going on this planet. But that's not the country that we have.
By the way, the greatest program we ever did was the Marshall Plan, where we helped our defeated enemies, and they became our top allies in the world. It's not just to be decent people. It works. It's practical. It helps your economy in the long run. That's why we were beloved for a while in the world. And now what do? All we do is send over bombs. And so then Joe Scarborough will go on TV and go, "They hate us because they hate us." When in reality, if we spent less than $1 billion, if you took one out of the 54 billion that they're asking for in additional money to the Pentagon and sent it to help 20 million people actually survive and live instead of die from famine, drought, cholera, and all these other things. Imagine that they might love us because they love us,
yeah,
because we actually did something right, and all the benefits that accrue from that. Even if you just looked at it from economic terms, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, add the $600 billion in tax cuts to the healthcare law,
yeah,
or the Bush tax cuts, or I mean, we could go on. The oil subsidies, the big pharma. I would like some of that money to go to America because there's a lot of Americans starving and this and that. But you could definitely put a dent in what you're seeing with these numbers if we would quit the corporate welfare and, you know, social Darwinism masked as Republican healthcare.
I think these Somali individuals should incorporate, and then our government might send them some money.
Yes.
It's more likely to happen there. I want to run through some of these other numbers, though, because I want you to get an idea of the scale of the tragedy that we're talking about. Mr. Gutierrez said the money, that $825 million, is needed to help between 5 and 6 million people, about half of the entire population of Somalia, to survive for the next 6 months, survival being very much in question right now. Famine was last declared in Somalia back about 6 years ago after an estimated 260,000 people died during a 2 month period. Wow. Somalia has multiple famines. That one happened not too long ago. And as usual, there was some aid, but largely the world watched as hundreds of thousands of people died. Now, here's a point that I want to return to in just a second. You need to understand that part of the problem in terms of relieving some of the suffering there is that organizations like Shabab, the terror group, blocks the roads, stops access to food aid, and steals food as well. That makes it far harder to solve the problem. We're going to return to that in just a second. But I want to round out some of these numbers to give you an idea of where these problems are and how big they are. So people at risk of starvation in Yemen, there are more than 7 million people. Somalia has almost 3 million, South Sudan 5 million, and Nigeria 5.1 million as well. We're talking about a large section of the Earth's population, multiple cultures, but a common problem. Mostly starvation combined with drought, sometimes in war-torn areas, areas where the U.S. has been involved, is still involved in some areas. But then there's also the children. Children suffering from malnutrition, the numbers are stark as well. In Yemen, almost 500,000 people. Several hundred thousand in Somalia, hundreds of thousands in South Sudan, and almost 500,000 in Nigeria as well. And it's being covered, you know, this famine. You can find articles on most sites. Jake Tapper actually talked about it on Sunday, but it's not sexy. It doesn't bring ratings, and so people don't focus on it. And so they might be exposed to the information, but then they go back to their everyday life.
Well, it's actually a tiny bit more complicated than that even, because there is some element of terrorism involved, like mm-hmm. Al-Shabaab. Mm-hmm. Now, you know the media loves to talk about terrorism, and they talk about it even disproportionately to its actual impact. So a great example is within this story.
Yeah.
So imagine if a terrorist strike killed 260,000 people. It'd be the biggest event in world history. We would never stop talking about it. The famine kills 260,000 people back in 2011. Yeah, nobody even remembers.
Yeah.
You know, all that never forget stuff. Not if it's a famine, then we forget immediately. So it's super disproportionate. But there is terrorism angle here, but yet nobody's talking about it. Now, why is that? Because talking points don't arise out of thin air. They are manufactured and sent to the media. So if you want to start hostilities in a certain country, perhaps if they have a lot of natural resources, and some of these countries don't have much natural resources at all. Nigeria does, but yeah. Not Somalia, not much in Sudan, not enough oil, right? So all of a sudden, oh my God, look at what is happening in Iraq, the humanitarian crisis there, Syria crisis, this crisis, that crisis. North Korea, they're kind of crazy. They already have nuclear weapons, as opposed to the Iraqis that were thinking about weapons of mass destruction. But whatever, let's not hype that up too much. Now they get press coverage because their leader is so crazy, right? But nobody's talking about invading North Korea. That's just not a thing that anybody talks about. These countries in Africa and the Gulf, Now, not only is there nothing to go get there, hence the defense contractors never handed the guys in the media talking points, and that's why we never talked about it. Because if they wanted, they could hype up Al-Shabaab. Oh my God, Al-Shabaab. Because Al-Shabaab is a really nasty group. There's plenty to be fearful of there and that you can rile people up over. They just chose not to rile you up over that Muslim terrorist group. Isn't that interesting? And then finally, Yemen, which is one of the biggest problem spots here. Well, part of what's causing the problem in Yemen is our ally Saudi Arabia, which is bombing the hell out of them, and then nobody can get in medical aid, not because of Al-Shabaab, but because of Al-Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And they're our top allies. So
And look, as we've covered in this story, there are a lot of things influencing this. Some of this is simply the reality of the area. Some of it is within our control. I mean, after all, it's not like the U.S. isn't involved in these areas. We're involved in the fight against Boko Haram in some of these countries. But then there's also other things. I mean, we talk very, very often about global climate change and how it's the single greatest threat to the continuation of human civilization. But some people don't believe it because when the damage is done, they don't see it as having been climate change. But in some of these countries, they share basically one large lake in the center on the border, surrounded by arable, fertile land. That lake has been gradually getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And that is just one case study of the drought-induced civil war and famine that will come about as a result of global climate change. And it's not just going to be Africa, and it's not just going to be the Middle East. Already China is experiencing growing starvation and drought. They're proposing the world's largest water transportation pipeline to get water from thousands of miles north of a particular region of China because they can't grow food because the desert is expanding in that area. It's growing more and more dry over time. That is a trend that is only going to continue and perhaps accelerate in the future.
I'm just going to add one last thing. So, if anybody in the mainstream media is watching this, they'll think, oh, you guys are nuts. There's nobody giving us talking points from Raytheon and Lockheed Martin to start wars but not to talk about al-Shabaab. Really? But I'm going to ask you guys, think about it. Why were you talking about Iraq so much and the humanitarian crisis in Iraq because of Saddam Hussein, the non-existent weapons of mass destruction? They did. The way that they handed you a talking point was Republican politicians would come out and go, look over here, this is the problem. And you're like, well, what can I do? Republicans say this, Democrats say that, I have to go cover it. And those guys are paid by their donors. Their donors are Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, etc.
Yeah.
And so, whereas al-Shabaab, you could argue, is just as bad a terrorist group as any of them out there, including ISIS. And then, no donor paid Republicans to go fearmonger about al-Shabaab. So that talking point never went to the Republicans and hence never went on your air. So it's not that there's some cabal and you're in on it. It's that you're in a game and you don't even realize what game's being played.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I know we're out of time. Let's do one last story because it is okay. Super interesting.
Okay. Give me one second. Okay. The results of a new study might help provide a little bit of explanation as to why it is that so often in this country, police officers apparently overestimate the amount of threat posed by generally unarmed black males. Why is it that they see these people and think, I must use lethal force or my life is forfeited at that point? And also, in a larger sense, how we view the males of different races. So researchers asked nearly 1,000 online participants to judge the height, weight, muscularity, and strength of both black and white men based only on photos of their faces. So that's limited information to go on, but there is a little bit of information, and particularly salient information in America, considering our racial history and context. All participants in the survey, both white and black, consistently overestimated the measurements for black faces relative to white faces, even though the men pictured were all of similar size. There was no games being played with the size of the faces. The information is being provided from inside of the brain of the participant in the survey. In another experiment, participants were shown the exact same racially ambiguous body. When the person was labeled as black, participants thought he was taller and heavier than those who were told he was white. It is literally the exact same body. Not even the apparent the phenotypic race is being modified there. It's literally only the identification of the person's race. Now, as I said there, white and black similarly overestimated the size of these people. But a difference emerged when the researchers asked participants whether the person appeared threatening and if police force would hypothetically be justified if that person were a suspect. Only the white participants felt the perceived greater size of the black faces made them greater threats and more potentially deserving of force. So while black individuals in the survey also overestimated the size, they did not then think, as a result of that, police are justified in using force, potentially even lethal force.
So there's a couple of different factors at play here. So what we always talk about how discrimination and stereotypes are in all of our heads. So they're even in black folks' heads. So and this is not surprising. The study after study has borne this out. If you tell people that they are inferior, they begin to internalize it, which is of course slightly different. But you internalize a lot of the stereotypes that are out there, right or wrong. The famous blue eye, brown eye experiment in Kansas. All white kids, but we're told blue eyes are inferior or brown eyes are inferior. Not only do the superior eye race get all confident and do better in the tests, the inferior eyes, whether they're blue eyes or brown eyes, they switched, okay? Yeah. And immediately worked anyway. They start to think that they're inferior. So even black folks think that black guy is bigger than the white guy, even though they're the same size. And even mentioning the word black gets them to think bigger. But there is a difference though. Black folks think bigger, but they don't think danger, because why? Among the reasons why is because they live with other black people and they know day to day, there isn't like, oh my God, we're in constant danger. What if my aunt attacks me? Right? Whereas a lot of white folks, of course, now in America have interaction with black people, but a lot of them don't. And if they're
or far less and yeah, different sorts.
Exactly. Their interaction is smaller. They have a black friend at work, but they don't live in a city or a portion of a city with a lot of African Americans. So to them, it seems foreign and an outsider. And an outsider or an other is always perceived danger.
Right. Yeah. Well, this goes to the history of America. There's a great documentary on Netflix called 13th out right now. And they tell the details that after the slaves were freed, you know, that was a huge hit to the economy. So they had to basically put them in jail to work. And the government, the police, they made black people spooky and they made them very dangerous. And they that's kind of where this way before that, but where the notion that these people could be up to no good. I mean, so a couple years ago, a black guy with a hoodie, Trayvon Martin, walking with Skittles. The way the media, conservative media, some media depicted it is he's beat George Zimmerman to within an inch of his life.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even possible body type. Yeah. So it's systemic in police departments and just the way people think. And this president is also not helping.
So yeah, two things about what Jordan said. One, even more stark is the Tamir Rice case in Cleveland, where he was 12 years old, had a toy gun. They didn't even ask, they killed him in 2 seconds flat. But the cop thought that he was 24 years old. And by the way, another study shows that young black kids are considered by people who are seeing them as about 3 to 4 years older than the same age white kids.
Kids who were less than 10 years old in a lot of cases.
That's
a huge
right.
shift.
So blacks are perceived as bigger, stronger, older, and by white people as more dangerous. Now, if you've got that.
And also, in that study, more responsible for their actions, because this is an older kid. They should know what they're doing, but they're not. They're younger.
And if you've got that thought in everybody's head and that stereotype is set in, and it's also true of the cops. It's not that the cops are worse people, it's in all of our heads. But the cops have guns and they have authority. So what we should do is instead of saying, oh no, all the cops are good, leave them alone. We should say, hey, maybe we could try to get that out of our heads so they don't disproportionately kill African Americans, which is true. That does happen significantly disproportionately. And how did it get in our heads? That's the other point that Jordan made that's so interesting. After slavery was over, the economy takes a hit, etc., and the propaganda begins because we need to replace that labor force. And there's many other factors. And oh my God, they're free! And remember, look at what we did to them. What if they do it back to us? And there's all this fear, and there's all this need at that point. So they start a systematic propaganda program, including the first feature-length film ever, A Birth of a Nation, with a white guy dressed in blackface who would go around and grabbing all the white women and raping them. Right, and so that is how the stereotype began, and that's why when people say, "Hey, this is remember Jim Crow, remember slavery," you know, the people go, "Oh, that doesn't matter. That was so long ago." No, unfortunately, it does matter. That's where it started, and it has rained down on us, and it's still affecting this whole culture, and hence leading to these results.
Do you remember we did a story? It might have been a year ago. I'm not entirely sure. It was after one of the unnecessary shootings of an unarmed black male, and the descriptions were out there. This is a thug. Look how big they are. How scary they are. And so we went back and we showed newspaper clippings from the last 100 years of how they describe black assailants and crimes, and they used words like beastly and massive, a giant of a man. That's been going on for a long time, and so it's partially them reflecting the prejudices they had, and it partially serves the purpose of propagandizing, telling people that these are not the same humans as other humans. They're larger, scary, dangerous people. And one of the reasons I was so glad to cover this, political psychology is the area of academia that I come from. I miss it a lot. Everybody needs to read more political psychology, because if you understand the way the human brain filters information, how it tries to make sense of a complicated world, you can understand how we get police brutality, how we get bills based on policies that have been shown time and time again to not actually function the way they're supposed to. So it's always a pleasure to cover a little bit
of this. I'll just add real quick, expanding beyond just African Americans, having covered Standing Rock, you know, as many times, if you breathe near a police officer in this country, the deference goes to them. If they say, "Oh, we were under threat," this and that. I mean, some of the shit I saw out there was straight out of a dystopian, like horror flick. So the Native Americans, whatever the minority, even white people, until that psychology that, you know, you're not criticizing all police officers, but you cannot give them carte blanche to do whatever they want. I mean, we're going to continue having this.
Yeah, of course, the correct answer is, it's not all police officers, and at the same time, we should hold our public officials accountable. It's not that complicated. And you want to talk about negative stereotypes. After, in this country, the Native Americans were butchered and massacred and given diseases and almost wiped out, then we called them savages.
Yeah.
So, and that's still with us today. So there's a lot of work to do, and the way we do it, by the way, is to educate each other, right? And try to get that crap out of all of our heads, because it isn't true. Okay, all right. So in the post game, what's the story that I got wrong? If it was a really serious story, I'd tell you now. Okay,
but it was or not admit to it.
Oh, right, it would have done hide it, right? So a fun little story. I'll tell you how I got it wrong, why I got it wrong, and. And then the deep state, what is it, does it exist, okay, and what does it mean? So that should be a really interesting conversation. So members get the post games, that's tytnetwork.com/join to become a member. All right, bye-bye.